Hey, good afternoon, everybody. This is Steve Johnson, and here's another episode of the All Day SJ Show. Got a very special guest joining me today on another episode of the second season. He is an associate editor and reporter with AmicoHoops.net. He's an NBA contributor to Eurobasket News, and he also co-hosts the Three Man Weave podcast. He's done a lot of great work covering a lot of NBA teams in the Midwest, the Cavaliers, the Bucks, the Pacers, the Bulls. He is Ashish Mathur. Ashish, my brother, what's going on?
What's up, man? Appreciate you having me on.
I appreciate you joining me, man. I'm very excited to talk with you. Like I just mentioned, you've done a lot of covering the NBA, specifically in the Midwest, covering the likes of LeBron James, Derrick Rose, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Victor Oladipo, man. I'm excited, dude. You big time, and you joining my podcast. Thank you.
No, man, it's all love, Chicago love.
Oh, absolutely, man. I appreciate you thinking of the homies in Chicago, and we got to stick together in this thing called sports broadcast, called sports journalism, and without a doubt, man, let's get into it. So I know we was chopping it up in the pre-show meeting. We was talking about the Western Conference standings. A big night tonight in terms of playoff seeding in the Western Conference, bro. So what you got to say about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty crazy. Pretty much of seed 5 through 9, all the teams are separated by one game, and like you said, tonight's a big night. I think the Timberwolves, they got an easy night tonight. They're playing the Memphis Grizzlies at home, and Memphis is pretty much resting all their starters, so should be a win for Minnesota, even though they did lose to Memphis at home, I think, 2 weeks ago, so we'll see how that goes. But yeah, man, it's a tight race. I mean, you got the Thunder, Spurs, Pelicans. I think everybody's kind of trying to avoid the seventh and eighth seed because nobody's really trying to play the Rockets and Warriors in the first round. Although I think if the Thunder and Warriors match up in the first round, I don't think OKC could win, but I think they could give the Warriors a run for their money, especially since we know that Stephen Curry's out for the first round. Just because you got so much experience. You got Russ, you got Melo, you got PG. I know they've kind of underwhelmed this year. I think everybody expected them to be like a top three seed, but the playoffs is a different animal, as you know. And all three of them got playoff experience, so I think that'd be a fun matchup, Warriors Thunder in the first round.
Yeah, man, and I'm so glad that you mentioned the Thunder. You follow me on Twitter, Ashish, and you know I'm a big Thunder fan now because the Bulls have taken the path to tanking. So the Thunder became kind of like my burner team, so to speak. I decided that once they got PG, once they got Melo to join Russ, I was like, all right, this is the team I'm going to follow. And man, you hit it on the head. They got so much playoff experience and star power that I think that they can match up well with any team in the West. And I'm low-key hoping, you alluded to it, I don't want it to be a first-round matchup. I'm kind of hoping they stay in that fourth or fifth range because I want them to have a first-round playoff series with a team like Portland or San Antonio just because I know that it's going to be entertaining and I know that they can beat them. But, and here's where I think me and you are going to have a spirited debate, man. I feel that if Oklahoma City gets a team like Houston in the first or second round, they can pull off the upset. And hear me out, and then I'll let you tell me why I'm wrong. I think, for the reasons that you said, Russell Westbrook, Carmelo Anthony, Paul George, and a guy that you didn't mention, I think the most important cog on that team, man, is Steven Adams. I have not seen one big man, sans Anthony Davis, obviously on New Orleans, but I have not seen one big man on Golden State, Houston, Portland, or San Antonio that can stop Steven Adams. That dude is a monster down low. And like you said, in the playoffs, it's a different animal. It's more of a half-court ISO game. It's not as up and down. It's more physical. It's more defense being played. I think that a team like Houston with Clint Capella, with Nene, who's getting up there, they don't have an answer for a guy like Steven Adams. I think you saw that on Saturday. Oklahoma City was able to close them out because they were able to play ISO ball. Russ was able to get to the rim at will. PG and Melo were hitting big shots, and Adams was just a monster on the offensive boards. I honestly believe if Oklahoma City got Houston in the second round, man, I would go with Oklahoma City in six games just for the simple fact, what if Houston's threes aren't falling, man? At that point, they become just another team who's perimeter-oriented and can beat Oklahoma City up in the middle or on in the mid-range game. So I think a lot of people are sleeping on Oklahoma City just for that reason. Like you said, they've underperformed. They haven't really played up to their potential. But I've maintained my position that they're a team built for the playoffs. And like you said, they might not be able to beat Golden State, but they don't fear Golden State. They definitely don't fear Houston. And I think they can beat Houston in a playoff series. What do you have to say about that?
Yeah, I agree about Steven Adams. I retweeted Blake Griffin's tweet about how Steven Adams is one of the most underrated players in the game. Yeah, he's a tough dude. You don't want to mess around with him down low. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just Houston, they are just, I mean, they shut me up because before the year started, I didn't think CP3 and James Harden would work together. I didn't think it was going to work at all.
Right.
They entered today 64-16. You know, they clinched the one seed in the West. They are just an unbelievable team. I mean, it's kind of annoying how the refs kind of officiate James Harden. Take anything away from him. I mean, he's an unbelievable player. He's my league MVP this year. I mean, Harden Island, you don't want to be there. But, I mean, man, just the way they officiate him. Like, on Saturday, like, he was driving baseline to the left, and he hooked his right arm over PG, but they called a foul on PG. I just don't get that. I agree with you that, you know, the Thunder are definitely, you know, the wild card danger team in the West, but I just can't see them beating Houston or Golden State. The only way I could see them beating Golden State is if they match up in the first round and Curry's not playing. Because as we've seen, the Warriors, they're just 5-5 in their last 10 games. They kind of look like a normal team without Steph out there. You know, KD is obviously, you know, he's my second best player in the league, but he kind of has struggled. He struggles to be that alpha, you know, without Steph. So
right. Good point.
I agree with you that the Thunder are definitely the team that nobody really wants to face in the playoffs. Because like you said, they don't fear anybody. You know, they got, you know, the reigning MVP. You know, we know Westbrook is a dog. He goes 48 minutes all day. You have to hope that PG and Melo find their shot once the playoffs start. Because you look at Melo, like the game on Saturday, like the first half, he looked great.
Right.
I mean, he looked like 5 years younger. But then the second half, you could kind of see the shot was, you know, wasn't falling as much. But and PG, I hate to say this, man, it just kind of looks like he's like mentally checked out of OKC. I mean, he's shooting 34% from the field since the All-Star break. And last Saturday, he admitted to reporters that my shot feels funny, like something feels wrong. Like bro, like you've been in the league for a minute now. Like, you shouldn't be saying stuff like that.
Right.
You have to hope that they get it together during the playoffs because, like, we've seen this year, like, when all three of them are open and scoring 20 points, I mean, they've beaten the Warriors twice this year. So I hope that they can get it together because they are the team that I think if they could get on a run, like, man, they could legitimately get to the finals.
Ashish Mathur joining the All Day SJ show. You can give Ashish a follow at amathur90 on Twitter. You can follow me at alldaysj_ as well. And yeah, man, that's great stuff right there. Sticking with the Western Conference topic, another team we paid close attention to being from Chicago is the Minnesota Timberwolves. Tom Thibodeau, head coach, D. Rose, Jimmy Butler, Taj Gibson. So the Chicago connection is there.
Don't forget about Aaron Brooks.
Hey, man, you know, I wanted to say Aaron Brooks. I joked about that on Twitter a couple times, too. Like, he's like the forgotten bull that's on that team. But, you know, that's very funny right there. They're in serious danger of not making the playoffs, man. They're tied for they'll get in by virtue of the tiebreaker, I believe, if the season ended today. But they're in a virtual tie with the Denver Nuggets for the eighth seed. And let's say, you know, they both – I know Minnesota has Memphis today and Denver has Portland today. So let's say that they both win. That sets up a winner-take-all for the last game of the season. I believe Denver comes to Minnesota for the last game of the season, man. And I wanted to get your opinion on, do you want to see the Timberwolves in the playoffs over a team like Denver? Personally, like, I believe, and this is my honest opinion, I believe a team like Denver is a bigger matchup nightmare for Houston, just for the same reason I told you the Thunder are. That boy in the middle in Denver, Nikola Jokic, man, that dude is a monster. You're talking about a dude that can shoot from three, give you triple-doubles. They got a healthy Paul Millsap. They got a guy that can light it up in Jamal Murray with Gary Harris, with Wilson Chandler. I think Denver is a tougher matchup for Houston than Minnesota, who has a hobbled Jimmy Butler, who's got guys like Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins who've never been there before. Yeah, you got Taj Gibson, who's playoff-tested. He's the anchor. And you got a guy like Jeff Teague, D-Rose, who are also playoff-tested. But, man, who do you think would be the better matchup for the Houston Rockets in round one, Denver or Minnesota?
Neither team would beat Houston.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just get that out of the way.
Okay.
I agree with you, though. I think Denver would be the better matchup, especially if they can get Gary Harris back. He's been out for the last 2 weeks with knee soreness.
Right.
If they make the playoffs, I believe he'll play. But you got two sharpshooters in Murray and Harris. You got, like you said, just a monster in the paint with Jokic. Paul Millsap has struggled to come back from his wrist injury, but he's slowly rounding into form, and you expect him to, you know, up the intensity once the playoffs start. Since you are a DePaul man yourself, we got to shout out Wilson Chandler.
Yes, sir.
You know, he's a nice 3-and-D guy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Hit the open shot, guard when he needs to. I don't really trust their bench. And the playoffs, as you know, you need to have a good bench to advance. But, yeah, I don't think either team would beat Houston. Minnesota, you know, obviously I'm biased because I want to see D-Rose back in the playoffs.
Right.
Even though maybe we can talk about it later, even though Thibodeau is not really using him the way we thought he would. But,
right.
You got Jimmy Butler coming back from an injury. Carl Anthony Towns is a very good player. I don't think the playoffs would faze him at all. I think he'd be fine. One guy that I actually want to get your opinion on as well is Andrew Wiggins. I don't think anybody doubts his talent. You know, he's a guy who can get you 20 in the sleep. But it just doesn't seem like, and I've never met the guy, and I've never covered a T-Wolves game, so I don't know if I'm coming at a right angle here, but just from afar, it doesn't really look like he loves the game. It just kind of seems like he's going through the motions out there and doesn't really show a lot of emotion on the court. And it just kind of seems like he settles for a lot of tough contested twos when he could pretty much get to the rim whenever he wants. What do you think about Wiggins as a player?
Man, I'm glad you asked me that, Ashish, and I believe that that's going to lead to our next topic with Thibodeau and Derek. First off, let me just start by saying I think Andrew Wiggins is the second best player on that team. And hear me out. I know they have Jimmy, but I think when that trade was made to bring Jimmy over, I think instantly Wiggins' role changed. Wiggins' role went from being the second best player on that team to being like a third glue guy type of person, which is the role I think Jimmy should be playing. I think at their core, the best scorer on that team is Wiggins. Like you said, he can get to the rim at will. He's got a decent mid-range game. He's trying to advance it to beyond the arc so he could translate that into a three-point shot. But when you're on a team that's competing to win, a team is defined by their roles. I think Wiggins' role on that team should be the go-to scorer, not named Karl Anthony Towns. If you need a bucket, go to Anthony Towns inside. But if he can't give it to you, you should get it to Wiggins to get you that bucket. I to this day believe that, and, you know, we're from Chicago. We watched them for the last 6 years. I believe that Jimmy isn't that guy that be like, go give me 20 points. Go give me 25 points. I need it. He's very reliant on, you know, free throw shooting. Jimmy needed to get 12 to 14 free throws a game just to average 22 points. He's not the guy that can create his own shot and just score at will. Andrew Wiggins is. He's talented enough to do that. And I believe that it's a case of their roles are reversed. Jimmy should be what Jimmy was under Thibodeau at first. Be the guy who can lock down the guy in front of him. Be a guy that lets his defense lead to his offense. Jimmy's defense, if he's focused, locked in defensively, he can still average 15 to 18 a game. And I believe that's his role in the NBA. He can be that defensive specialist guy who can use his athleticism, his size, to get you 16 to 18 points a game. And now that he has the benefit of the star label, he can still get you those free throws when you need them. But don't rely on him to give you 25 and awesome defense. When he needed to be that guy with the Bulls the last 2 years after Derrick's role diminished and he was eventually traded, you saw what Jimmy Butler averaging 25 points can give you at very best the first round winning two games. So while I see what you're saying in terms of Wiggins' demeanor on the court, I think it's more so because he's frustrated with his role in that offense and he's frustrated with how Thibodeau's using him as kind of like the glue guy, rover guy, instead of the go-to scorer, one of the main options on offense, if that makes any sense. And that's going to...
If you remember, I think a month ago, there was a report that came out that said Wiggins has whispered to teammates that he's upset being the third option
guy. Exactly.
So, and obviously, you know, sources, you know, it's always 50-50, so we don't know if it's true. And obviously, both Wiggins and Tibbs, they were asked about the report and both shot it down. But I don't know, man, just like the way he plays, man, it just kind of seems like, you know, he's just happy to be on the court, you know, happy that he got his max extension. And I just don't really see that passion and just aggressiveness for him. Like, against the Lakers, I mean, he was taking, like, fadeaway long twos when, like, guards were guarding him. And I don't know, he's a very puzzling player to me because, like, he can jump out the gym, man. And everybody keeps saying, oh, he's so talented. And I think there was a coach on Minnesota, he said he's, like, the most talented player I've ever seen in, like, my 20 years of coaching. And I don't know, he's just a very puzzling player to me. But Jimmy, I agree, you know, he relies on the free throw shooting a lot, but we got to give him some credit a little bit. You know, he's worked on his game. You know, he can shoot the three ball now. He's really good at, you know, finding those lanes. And as I hate to say it, but drawing fouls is considered a skill now by some. I don't know if I totally agree with it because I don't think, you know, when you're drawing a foul, you're relying on a third party, which is the referee, right?
Right.
So I don't think you can have a skill when it's relied on somebody else, but hey, I mean, the guy knows how to get to the line. You got to give him credit for that, even if some of us don't like it. But
yeah, man, you'll never hear me not say that Jimmy hasn't improved. I give him all the credit in the world. He has improved from when he first came into the league. But don't try to sell me on he's this guy that could be the best player on a championship team. He's not. Like, I think at best he's at best a second or third option on a team that's contending for a championship. You're trying to tell me with Jimmy Butler as your best player, you think he can lead your team past the Golden State Warriors or the Houston Rockets or the Oklahoma City Thunder or the San Antonio Spurs or the Portland Trail Blazers? All those teams right now can get past this team if Jimmy Butler's their best player. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree.
Right. That's all I'm saying.
I agree. I think, you know, the national media doesn't talk enough about Portland. I did not expect them to be the third seed in the West. I mean, they have shocked a lot of people. I don't know if you watched Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum's one-on-one with ESPN, Chris Haynes a couple weeks ago. They like went out to dinner and did like a whole hour sit down, and even Chris was like Look, I gotta admit to y'all, like, I'm sorry, because I had you guys as like the 8th or 9th seed, and CJ McCollum was just sipping his tea and smiling. You know, I did not expect them to be this good. We need to talk a little bit more. The national media needs to talk a little bit more about Portland, because when you look at the roster, you think, okay, Dame and CJ. And then Nurkic, yeah, he's a nice player, but you don't consider him an all-star or anything. So the way that they've climbed up the standings and beating all these teams with just two primary scorers, I mean, it's very impressive. And he won't win Coach of the Year, but Terry Stotts should definitely get more, you know, votes and recognition for Coach of the Year, in my opinion.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's a great point with Portland, Ashish. And you know what? I've always been a big Dame Lillard fan. I think he's probably the most underappreciated player in the game. CJ McCollum, easily in my opinion, a top five shooting guard in the game. They're probably the give or take the second or third best backcourt in the game behind Steph and Klay, obviously. And then I know some people want to argue Lowry and DeRozan or Bill and John Wall. I said some people want to argue that, you know, you want to talk about Portland being underappreciated. You know, people wonder, I get it's the Eastern Conference, man, but people underappreciate what Toronto's doing. Like, we're going to get into that too. You just got on me about not giving enough credit to some players. You got to give some credit to DeRozan and Lowry, my man. I'm sorry.
I like DeRozan. We can talk about Kyle Lowry later.
Oh, yeah. I'm just saying, like, it again, and that's the good thing about it, Ashiz. It's all about opinion. It's all about speculation when it comes to just how good these guys are. I've always been a big fan, like I said, of Dame and CJ, and I'm very happy that, you know, they're finally starting to get that recognition, being the third seed in the toughest conference. You know, I remember CJ just dropped 50 on the Bulls not too long ago. Am I correct?
Yeah, CJ, man, I watched that game. He went off.
Yeah, man, the dude can play, and like he has the right level of pettiness to it. Like, he'll remind you that, hey, man, like, facts only. Like, you guys said I wasn't gonna be anything. So he uses that as the right way to motivate himself. Dame uses him being underappreciated to motivate himself, and that translates to the court, man. And, you know, they're the third seed. Whoever they get, that's probably going to be the best first-round series in the Western Conference, man, because it's going to be a dogfight. And I'm absolutely intrigued by what the matchups are going to be when it's all said and done in the Western Conference. The East, not so much, and that's what we're going to get into right now. The Eastern Conference is pretty much set in stone. You got Toronto as your one seed. You got Boston as your two seed. The third seed, the seeds 3 through 8, that's where the level drops off, obviously, sans Cleveland, who's pretty much comfortable wherever they're going to be, 3 or 4. What are your predictions coming out the Eastern Conference, and who do you think has the chance to, like we talked about the Thunder being the wild card in the West, who do you think has the chance to be the wild card in the East?
Well, unfortunately, I got the Cavs winning the Eastern Conference. I don't care what anybody tells me. I don't see anybody beating LeBron James 4 games. It's just, man, this is 15th year, man, and he's doing some crazy stuff. I know in Chicago, you know, we ride with Jordan, and I will never, ever put LeBron over Jordan, but we got to give him some credit. I mean, he's playing unbelievable basketball. And so, yeah, I don't see anybody beating Cleveland. Toronto, I mean, we've seen this for the past couple years with them, where they have a great regular season, and they all say, oh, yeah, this is the year. And then we can get into Kyle Lowry in L.A. I think Kyle Lowry is a great regular season player. I know the analytics people love him, but I don't believe in the dude in the playoffs. I mean, the last 3 years, he struggled so bad.
Right.
And when I was it last year or 2 years ago where he left the game and went into the locker room and he told reporters, oh, yeah, I just needed to to catch my breath, to clear my head or something. Like, bro, you...
Yeah, are you serious?
You can't do that in the playoffs, man. Like, you can't do that. Like, this is the heat of the battle. You can't just leave your team and be, oh, I just needed to clear my head or something like that. Like, that just shows you're mentally fragile. So, I don't believe in Toronto. I love DeRozan as a player. I think he's a great player. And got to give him a lot of credit for, you know, extending his range to the three-point line. But it's a shame what happened to Boston, man.
Oh, man.
I was in Cleveland open night, Cavs versus Celtics, and, man, I had the worst view for the Gordon Hayward injury. My press seat wasn't on the 100 level, but it was, like, in the direct, like, viewpoint of where his injury happened.
Right.
And I just remember just, like, looking out of the corner of my eye, seeing a green shoe facing the other way of somebody's leg.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh, God, no. And, yeah, I just felt so bad for Hayward, man. Your first game as a Celtic, opening night. You know, prayers up to him. I know that he started running the other day. I hope he comes back next year and kills it, but yeah, what could have been for the Celtics? I mean, they wouldn't have beaten Cleveland, but they could have, you know, maybe taken it to 6 or 7 games. Brad Stevens is a hell of a coach. Kyrie's a bad boy. But now you got this Kyrie injury. You know, he's out for the playoffs. You know, he had a bacterial infection, so they had to do surgery for that. And then they did the second surgery to take his screws out from the 2015 injury. So hopefully he's ready to go by next year. But to answer your initial question, I think the Cavs win pretty easily the East. If there is one team who could maybe challenge them, I guess I would have to say Toronto. Look out for Indiana, too. I like Indiana. I like Victor Oladipo. He's a solid player. And Miles Turner can maybe give the Cavs some trouble in the paint. But, yeah, I really don't see Cleveland sweating at all in the playoffs, unfortunately. Or at least in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, man, I agree with you. And if you had to, if you made me, like, pick a dark horse in the East, to me, it would have to be Milwaukee. Just for the simple fact that they're if I had to, but like for their athleticism, they have a star in Giannis. They finally have a healthy Jabari Parker back, Chris Middleton, Eric Bledsoe. They seem to have the talent and the athleticism and the youth to compete with Cleveland. But like you said, it's LeBron James' world in the East. They're just living in it, man. They don't have the experience nor the coaching to take out a LeBron James led team. And going real quickly. Going back to your point about the Celtics, yeah, man, what could have been a healthy Kyrie Irving, a healthy Gordon Hayward, a healthy Al Horford? At some point this whole season, Boston's Big Three has been injured, and they suffered a key injury to one of their bench pieces in Marcus Smart. They're just a hobble team with a lot of bad luck, man. And that brings me to my next point. We're from Chicago, so we know this firsthand. Does it always seem that whenever there's a player or a team that poses a legitimate threat to a LeBron James-led team in the Eastern Conference, they get injured? Like, you know, we got to talk about D. Rose's Bulls when he was in MVP form, tears his ACL. Now we got Boston, who has a great coach and a great talent, and then Kyrie and Gordon Hayward go down to season-ending injuries. The Boston Celtics just got old. It just seems like LeBron's had a nice stroke of luck when it comes to teams that can actually threaten his dominance in the East. What would you say about that?
Oh, I completely agree. I mean, it's. I still haven't gotten over the D. Rose ACL injury because, of course, I'm biased, but I thought that 2012 team was going to beat the Heat and was going to ultimately win the finals. I mean, that was a hungry team. But yeah, it's just bad luck. I mean, I think after Rose tore his ACL, you had, the Pacers? They went to back-to-back conference finals. And,
right.
You know, the Heat, I think one series went to game 7, but that, you know, I think the Heat were just kind of playing around with them. Then you had the Raptors a couple years ago. I believe that went to 6 games.
Right.
But yeah, he's a great player, man, but he's had a lot of help, and I don't know who the author was, but he's a Chicago writer. He wrote that the D-Rose injury set back the Eastern Conference by, like, 6 years, because, like, he was, like, the last, like, superstar player that LeBron has gone up against in the Eastern Conference. I think when the Heat and Pacers were going at it, I think Paul George wasn't a superstar yet. I think he was still kind of making his way up there. And some people don't even consider him a superstar. They just say he's an all-star.
Right.
But, he's had a lot of luck, man, a lot of luck. But, you know, you can't take away from him going to 8 straight finals. I mean, it's still a hell of an accomplishment. But, yeah, I mean, when you look, I mean, if he was in the Western Conference, that's not happening.
Right.
I mean,
right.
That's why I never believe all the rumors that he would actually leave the East. I mean, because he just has it so easy out here. So, yeah, I definitely agree with your point. It's been a pretty easy run for Bron, but, I mean, there's so much nitpicking we can do. At the end of the day, we do got to give him some credit, but it's always going to be what if. You know, what if Rose stayed healthy, or what if Kyrie and Hayward stayed healthy this year? Because you got to remember, they got Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum. I mean, those guys are really good for how young they are. So,
right.
Yeah, it's always going to be what if. It's always going to be what if this dude stayed healthy, or what if this happened. But, you know, unfortunately, that's not how the NBA works.
Yeah, man. And real quick to your point about LeBron, again, like, the dude is great. He's arguably already a top 10 player in his league. We've never seen anything like him in terms of being a guy that big. Or I think Magic has a case, but just freakish athleticism and all that. And but it's like you said, man, he's had a lot of help, and he's had the benefit of playing in a weak era of his conference. Like, you know, it's easy to say, yeah, he got to the finals, but he's lost 5 times when he gets there. And then, you said, he's had a lot of help. I remember that one year with the Heat, he legit had 3 Hall of Famers as his teammates, 3 other Hall of Famers as his teammates. And, you know, I mean, I give the dude credit. Like, he's great. He's a great player. But, you know, I cringe every time, like, I hear, oh, he's the greatest player of all time. Like, that's just so disrespectful to guys like Michael and Kareem and you know, Wilt. And I don't think he's done enough to warrant himself as the greatest of all time. Like, you know, everyone always says, look at the numbers. I'm like, well, you know, maybe that's all he's playing for, because at the end of the day, his legacy is going to be he's lost 5 times in the finals. He's had to have, like you said, so much help to even get to the finals. And at the end of the day, man, I was watching something yesterday. Chris Carter pointed out, he was like, well, he's a mediocre free throw shooter. And he made the statement that there was nothing about Michael's game that was mediocre. You could point to several aspects of LeBron's game that's mediocre. So how can you call him the greatest player of all time? And I'm like, you know, but that's the discussion now. And it's kind of frustrating. And in my opinion, it's disrespectful to a lot of guys who have made a strong claim to being the GOAT, but just because LeBron has it in terms of numbers and stats, you know, he's automatically superseded them. I don't know. I guess that's frustrating to watch and listen to as a fan, man. But, you know, we're just...
You got to look at the 2011 finals, too. I mean, that's probably the biggest black eye in his career.
Yeah.
To get outplayed by J.J. Barea and Jason Terry.
Yeah, man.
I mean, Michael Jordan averaged 45 points per game in the Phoenix series.
Yeah.
And this dude, LeBron, scored 8 points. So.
I'm sorry for laughing, man. But just let that, for all my listeners, what Ashish just said, let that sink in. Let that sink in.
He even had Eddie House.
Yeah.
Eddie House was teammate LeBron. He went on what's Skip Bayless' new show, Undisputed.
Yeah.
And bro, he said, yo, LeBron quit.
Dang.
He openly said LeBron quit in that series. And so maybe he was still maturing, and you know, because that was the first year of the Heat Big Three, and, you know, maybe he was still mentally soft back then. You would never use the word quit with Michael, you know, so.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's going to be the biggest black eye in his career. Because they should have, I mean, look, I love Dirk Nowitzki. I'm happy that he won it, but there is no way that Dallas team should have beat that Heat team. And for LeBron to only score 8 points in a finals game and to get outplayed by Jason Terry, J.J. Barea, Deshaun Stevenson got in his head a little bit, like, that's just embarrassing, man.
Yeah. So, yeah, and you know,
I give him credit for coming back 3-1 against the Warriors a couple years ago. That was really good, but it's going to be hard to forget that 2011 series.
Yeah, and adding to that, the Game 7 against San Antonio, like, we got to give him credit for that too in the finals. He hit the big, yeah, you know, like I said, LeBron is great. You'll never hear me, you know, disregard his greatness, how what he's done for the game on and off the court, but I just can't go when people are trying to say he's better than Michael. I still can't go when people try to say he's better than Kobe. But that's a discussion for another day, Ashish. Ashish Mathur joining the All Day SJ Show. Again, you can follow him at amathur90 on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter at alldaysj_. Ashish, man, I just want to again thank you for joining the All Day SJ Show. This has been one of the best conversations I've had talking hoops with you, brother. You obviously know the game, and that's why you have a lot of success in covering it. What I like to do with my listeners, whenever I have a guest on, I like them to just have the floor and update my listeners on what you got going on. So with all due respect, man, the floor is yours. Let my listeners know what you got going on and what do you want us to look out for when it comes to you.
Hoping to get some credentials for the playoffs. Hopefully I can get to a Bucks game for the playoffs. I covered the Bucks all year. You talked about the Bucks being a dark horse team in the East. They're just a weird team to follow. I mean, they are playing, like, together basketball, and they're on it. Like, yeah, they could be any team in the league. But then last week, bro, they lost to the Nets
right at
home.
And right.
So that's just a weird team to me. And you got our boy, you know, Chicago's own Jabari. He's coming out and saying, you know, I'm uncertain about my future in Milwaukee. He's going to be a restricted free agent this summer. And there's reports that, you know, his camp and Milwaukee's front office has kind of gone distant. So it'll be interesting to see the Bulls try to pick up Jabari.
Right.
Maybe they got their own restricted free agent to deal with Zach LaVine. But yeah, man, just working, you know. Hopefully I can get to a Bucks game for the playoffs. If not, you know, just do what I've been doing, you know, just writing as much as I can. Try to get out to more podcasts here and there. But yeah, you know, you and me, we got the same goal, just trying to make this journalism thing full time. So,
absolutely, man. You know, we both from Chicago. We both love the game, and that's why we're gonna stick together and help each other make our dreams come true, man. And you know, I really respect what you're doing, man. You out there, you at the games, you networking, you making relationships with the players, you covering it. You do great work with Sam Amico and his website, and I just want you to keep up the good work. When ESPN or Fox Sports hire you away from us, don't forget about your homies in Chicago. You're the plug. You're the plug, man. Hit us up. You know what I'm saying?
I would never. If I can stick with Dero through all these years, that should prove to everybody that I'm a loyal guy.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, man. There ain't nothing wrong with that because, like we talked about in a pre-show meeting, he's still a productive player when used right. And I want to close the show. I know we were going to talk about that. Let's close the show on that. Like, why is Thibodeau trying to turn D. Rose into a spot-up shooter? He coached this man when he was an MVP, and now he's like he's taking him outside of his skill set. What's the deal with that?
I'm at a loss for words, bro. I don't know what's going on. So when the reports came out that the Wolves were interested in D. Rose, I was like, yo, let's get it. We about to, you know, okay, is Derek an MVP player? Hell no. Okay, that's gone. He's even admitted, like, that dude is gone.
Right.
But he averaged 18 points and shot 48% from the field with the Knicks last year.
Right.
So what I'm thinking is, okay, Tibbs is going to have him, you know, run that second unit. But then you got Wolves fans who are in love with Tyus Jones because of his real plus minus and all those finals stats that I just hate. They've, analytics has ruined a game that I love, and it really pisses me off.
Wait. Say that again for the people in the back. Ashish.
Analytics has ruined a game that I love, and it really pisses me off.
Like, thank you, sir.
There's a place for analytics, but you gotta also watch the game. Like, just watch the game, man. Like, you can either hoop or you can't.
Right.
Like, it's just that simple. You know, so what I was saying was, okay, if you want to play Tyus and Derek together, that's fine. But Tyus is the better spot-up shooter.
Right.
Derek is the better finisher slash slasher.
Right.
So I have no idea why Tibbs is playing him, Crawford, and Tyus together. I don't get that. I don't get... Against the Lakers, bro, they had D-Rose guarding Kyle Kuzma.
Mm-hmm.
And, hey, you know, Derek, he's from Chicago. He did a pretty good job. I think Kuzma scored one layup on him, but after that, he shut him down. But,
right.
Man, what's going on? Like, and I just don't get it. You know, I was talking to our mutual friend Chris about it. Like, I told Chris, hey, maybe Tibbs just did Derek a favor. And when Chris brought up a good point, he's like, well, it's not really a favor if you're not going to play him at the right spot.
Right. Exactly. And
I don't get it. I really don't get it. Like, there's not even a point to play him now that Jimmy's back, but you're still playing him at the small forward. You're putting him in the corner. He's a terrible three-point shooter. Terrible.
Right.
And out of all the people in the whole world, I did not expect Thibodeau to do this, and especially when you hear the way Tibbs talks about him. He says, oh, he's still got a lot left in the tank. Oh, he's a great pick-and-roll player. Oh, he can get to the paint and draw attention. And then you saw the two games he played good in before he sprained his ankle, that Houston game. Like, from that Clippers game, before he sprained his ankle, he scored 9 points in 6 minutes.
Right.
And he, because he had the ball in his hand. And I don't know what's going on. It's sad. I hope I'm wrong, but I think this is it. I think this is Derek's last year in the league. Because I think teams know he can hoop, but I think they just say he's just not worth the distraction. Like, he gets hurt too easily. He's taken two, you know, he's left two teams, even though, let's clear some stuff up. You know, he left the Knicks because his mom was sick. So
right.
Let's clear that up for all the haters. And then left the Cavs because, man, homie was just sick of getting hurt. And
yeah.
It pisses me off that, like, you know, Kevin Love and DeMar DeRozan, they come out and they say they have anxiety and depression. And I'm a psychologist, so I get that. I totally get that.
Right.
But D-Rose can't leave the team to assess his playing future. And then you even had the Cavs GM. He came out in a statement and said, this has been a very difficult time for Derek. But all we get is jokes and memes, and I'll never get the D-Rose hate. I never have, and I never will. But yeah, I don't know what Tibbs is doing. He's pissing me. He's pissing me off, man.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, I'm not gonna be upset if they miss out on the playoffs, man, because, you know, I mean, we watched that run in Chicago that Thibodeau had here, and I've always maintained that he's an elite defensive-minded coach, but when it comes to being a head coach, man, his offense is very stagnant. It's very one way or the highway. He doesn't adapt. He doesn't know how to adjust to the modern NBA game and spread out the floor and come up with schemes that can help score the basketball more efficiently. He always believes that grit and hard work is going to supersede talent and effective play calling. And that's always been my biggest gripe with him. And on top of that, man, like, I don't even know if these guys are going to be ready come playoff time. I think four of his five starters are in the top 10 in minutes played. So, you know, they're probably going to be gassed when they have to go up against a team that's running up and down the court. But, man, the story of Derrick Rose, man, I joke with people. That's always going to – I'd say it's going to make an awesome 30 for 30 when the time comes, man. But
I'm not watching that 30 for 30.
Yeah, it's sad. And, again, no one gets the hate, man. I think, you know, coming from a blue-collar town like Chicago where – he made some questionable comments that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. I still don't get why it rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. You know,
You know what I think it is? So we can compare it to Kawhi Leonard.
Right.
So Kawhi Leonard is in the same situation, right? Got cleared by doctors, but isn't ready, right?
Right.
Well, why doesn't he get hate? Well, because he already has a championship. I think the city of Chicago turned on Derek because there were realistic expectations that he was going to bring number 7 home, right?
Right.
So because he didn't do well, because he got hurt and then kept getting hurt and then play, fans were kind of like, yo, you owe us this. And I'm like, what?
Right, right.
Like, people owe y'all anything. Right. And that's kind of, that was always my perspective, where fans were like, bro, you got to play. Because they understood that when D. Rose is on top of his game, even after the injuries, he's still averaging 30 against Steph.
Right.
25 against Kyle Lowry. 22 against John Wall. Like, you can call him washed or whatever you want. He's still giving buckets to elite point guards on two bad knees.
Exactly.
I think that's what it was. Like, the Chicago, like, yo, we really had expectations that you were going to bring championship number 7 home, and because you didn't, I mean, I don't know if you remember the year he sat out, there was a fan who sued him. The fan sued him because he said, I'm depressed because of you.
Wow.
And if you don't believe me, I can send you the link and then you can retweet it or whatever. A fan actually sued him.
No, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, he sued him because he said, I became fat and depressed because you didn't play. And I think that was the whole message. Like, they were just mad that he was looking out for himself, because they were saying, oh, he's looking out for himself, but now we don't get number 7. So,
well, you hit it right on the head, man. They're mad at him because he got hurt. Like, let's be as realistic, let's be as clear about it. People are mad about him, are mad at him because he got hurt, and they became so emotionally invested in him as a player and him being from the city of Chicago, like, that they felt, like you said, that he owed them, when in reality he didn't owe them anything. You know, they and that's when the pocket watchers came out, oh, he's making all this amount of money.
God.
I'm like, that
Sports Illustrated article was so bad.
Man, dude. Let me tell you this, man. There's this article for the Undefeated, which was just an awesome piece of writing. I believe Derek had an interview with Mark J. Spears, and I'll tweet you the link when we're done here. But it just talked about who he was as a player, where he was at in his mind, and what he plans to do with the rest of his NBA career. And what I will always give Derek credit for, until recently where he was like, you know, I don't need your effing validation. What I will always give Derek credit for as a player is, despite all the noise, despite all the bull, despite all the Joe Cali hit pieces, he never once lashed out at him. He never once lashed out at his critics. He never once lashed out at the fans. He never once lashed out at the team. He just always kept to himself as that humble, you know, player that, you know, you can have the opinion if you want to. That's your right as a fan. And I've always respected him for that. And I'll never, you know, that's why no D. Rose slander will ever be tolerated, because I choose to remember that he single-handedly made the Bulls relevant again in this town. They were just living off the name of Michael Jordan and his 6 championships. He made it cool to be a Bulls fan again. And like you said, with that, we thought we had a legit chance at getting number seven because of what he was doing. But are we going to hold that against him because he got hurt? Real Bulls fans won't. Real NBA fans won't. No, it's going to be those analytic guys, those blog boys, as Kevin Durant rightfully called them, and those guys who've never watched a basketball game. They're going to be the guys who are always going to critique Derrick Rose. And those are going to be the guys that are going to try to keep him out the Hall of Fame, despite being the youngest MVP in NBA history, despite being one of the best players in the game before he got injured. So, you know, we could talk all day about Derrick's legacy and the rest of his career, but, you know, again, it's an unfortunate story, and hopefully this isn't his last year in the league. Hopefully he gets one or two more shots to prove that he's still a productive player in this league. But man, you know, we'll see what happens when it comes to the career of Derrick Rose. But I do want to say again, Ashij, I want to thank you for joining the All Day SJ show, man. This was a passionate, awesome discussion between two brothers who just love the game of basketball. And I would love to have you on my show again one day. Maybe we can do it when the playoffs are over and we could talk about the offseason and, you know, what's next for LeBron, because his free agency circus is going to start again. But, man, I just want to say I enjoy talking with you, and I thank you for joining the show, my guy.
Yeah, man, it was a lot of fun. Maybe we could talk about some Bears sometime in the offseason. Because they got a decent future. But yeah, I appreciate you having me on, man. It was a lot of fun.
Absolutely, man, and definitely let's get on that, because you're more than just the NBA, and you know, you're definitely one of the best guests I've had, and I'm looking forward to have you on to talk some Bears. Maybe we can talk some baseball once we get closer to the postseason. But this was just an awesome discussion, my man, and I thank you again for joining me.
No problem, man. It was my pleasure.